When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Drama,
fashion,
podcast, and who are we?
That's one secret we'll never tell.
XOXO,
Girls Room.
Hey, Upper East Siders, Girls Room here, the one and only podcast about the scandalous lives of Manhattan's elite. I'm Julia Gray. I have my incredible co-host with me, Drew Haskins.
Hello, welcome back, Julia.
Thank you. It's been a week. And joining us today is culture and fashion writer and editor and all around New York it girl, Alyssa Vingan. How you doing?
Great, thanks for having me.
So excited to have you, a New York girl, to discuss New York's hottest high schoolers.
Yes, I am really excited to be here. It was really fun to go back and watch a good chunk of season one of Gossip Girl to prep for this because I was more of an OC girl myself. And I, you know, obviously was very aware of Gossip Girl and I watched it, but I didn't watch it live because it was on during those years when I was like sophomore, junior in college. And like, I was not watching TV. I was at the club. So I lost my way, and I didn't have DVR at my house, in my apartment or my dorm or whatever I was living in at the time. So I fell behind, then I never got caught back up. So here we are. I've watched the series, I think almost fully, but in bits and pieces for sure. Mm-hmm. Well, and the plot lines are confusing. Like, I needed this refresher. I could not have come on here cold. I would have been the family trees and like the love. And, like, I don't know, rhombuses. I think that's a Seth Cohenism, but like the love rhombuses. I was just like, oh, okay.
And the little like plots that they set up, the misunderstandings. It really is a lot to keep track of, even in this episode that we're.
Oh, this episode was really hard. The family tree, like the dynamics, the group dynamics in this one were a lot. I feel like we have a lot of ground to cover.
Yep, so much. This episode really made me laugh for more reasons than one, but the family tree was wide.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I really like, this show does a lot of sitcom-esque hijinks with kind of misunderstandings and like family reveals that I know, you know, that's just like classic soap opera tropes. Like OC did it. Original like 90210 and Melrose Place did it like so well too, but when this show does it, I don't know why, it's always so like funny and silly and never too melodramatic, and it's just totally perfect to me, exactly what I want.
I just also feel like, is it Ed Westwick and Leighton Meester, they all just have this way that they can say a line and it can come off funny even if it's not.
Truly. I mean, that's the reason for our segment, Line Reads of the Week. It's not enough to just say Line of the Week, because some of these sentences are absurd.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. We talk a lot about the Serena Vanderwoodsen and Jenny Humphrey accents. They have little vocal tics that come out every now and again. These
Marble mouth Serena.
Oh, that's it. Also,
I don't think that's something I came up with. I feel like someone, maybe was it like Jezebel or someone used to do like the episode recaps way back when, or Gawker or something. I feel like someone described her as that, and I've never been able to forget it. Like, she does talk like she has a mouthful of marbles, and her delivery is insane sometimes.
Yeah. One of the things we've never really talked about on the podcast is how funny the like recap industrial complex was around this show. Like the Richard Lawson Gawker recaps were like biblical texts to me. Like I used to read them and reread them and just laugh and laugh and laugh. And I was trying to find them. In the NYC prep ones, which I will talk about NYC prep a little bit later in a later segment, because those were so funny to me, but they've all been scrubbed from the internet and the great like Peter Thiel Gawker purge. And I'm so
not even on like Wayback Machine or whatever.
I tried using the Wayback Machine, but what people don't tell you is that it is easier to buy a gun in this country than it is the Wayback Machine. Like it's impossible.
I believe you. I have never used it.
Yeah, I was going to say, as someone whose entire career has been online, I've never once tried to use it. I'm just like, you know what?
That's not
for past me. Is in the past now. But yeah, I do remember that, like, one of the first internships I had in New York City, I was living in an apartment with, like, three friends from college in, like, Midtown, and I was interning at Lucky Magazine. RIP, and also like a random like consumer PR agency. And the latter was, I mean, in the fashion closet at Lucky, I was like running around and like doing the typical fashion intern thing. So I didn't have time to like be on a computer. But the other one, I was on the computer like all day and I read a lot of episode recaps. Like it really filled my time. So there was a time and a place for them for me, for sure.
Being at Lucky Magazine also during this kind of style era.
Oh, yeah.
I bet that was interesting.
Yeah. And like, this was Teen Vogue heyday, which was like, and I feel like in, you know, this Gossip Girl universe, Teen Vogue would have been like at the debutante ball that they were filming. I guess they did the Creon ball, which was in Paris, which was the whole thing where like Lauren and Whitney got to go on the hills to quote unquote work that one time. But yes, this was this very prominent pop cultural New York. I'm from Virginia, but I don't necessarily think there were this level of debutante ball in my neck of the woods in Virginia.
No, definitely not. We're both from Maryland and we definitely did not. I like maybe in like Baltimore or something, mm-hmm. but not in the DC area.
Yeah, and I'm from Virginia Beach, so I feel like I was gonna guess maybe in like Northern Virginia or Richmond, but like definitely not.
Well, Richmond for sure. In the Deb ball culture in Richmond is trying to find a nice way to put this, but I'll just say Confederate. It's very it's very.
I get that vibe. Yes.
Well, yeah.
A debutante ball. I also love that. The detail of New York Times following Blair to the ball for a night out with. I mean, we'll get into that later, but
was that ever a real column? Or is that just like for this Gossip Girl? I don't know. I didn't fact check that, but I was wondering if I had ever read anything in the Times that was about it. I feel like that would be more of like a New York Magazine thing.
Yeah. New York Magazine has that party thing. Goer column now, mm-hmm. and oh my god, what was that?
Guys, they did a night out with Chrissy Teigen.
Oh,
exactly. I will not be reading that.
Their website I was trying to think of was Guest of a Guest would definitely have done.
Like, yes, wow. Remember Socialite Ring? This was all around this time. What a time to be alive, Finley Mortimer. Tinsley Mortimer, I feel like, also was a cameo on Gossip Girl. Maybe not season one.
She's in season two when they go out to the Hamptons.
Okay.
She's like the big cameo. And I think it was right around the same time that they had launched High Society as CW's first and maybe only foray into reality programming, which I think we've talked about on the show before. But people, if you have not seen High Society, it's an essential text. Like one season all on YouTube, every episode is 21 minutes and it is so fantastic.
What's the name of the main person they follow around?
So Tinsley is the main focus of High Society, but there are also fun characters like Paul Johnson Calderon, who is like
oh my gosh
Johnson and Johnson fortune. There's like
he made the bow ties.
Yes, he made the bow ties. Okay. He kept throwing beer cans out of limo windows. Like really an incredible character. There's like a third cousin to the Dreyfus fortune named Jules Kirby, who is like the most
I remember
racist
this.
Person I've ever
I
seen on TV.
Oh
yeah.
I was thinking it was the brunette girl. I'm really blanking on her name, but the one, oh, I was thinking of Julia Allison. Was that her name?
Oh.
Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Wait, I need to look that up. There was such like a
not
Julia Allison.
Like someone like I'm getting the name wrong, but there was someone who Gawker had like a whole column. I don't know. Maybe
yes. Yes, she had.
What was her name?
Her name was Julia Allison. She had a kind of personal blog that was also sort of a Gawker co-collab. And she is very famous for showing up to a Gawker Halloween party in 2006 dressed as the condom fairy in a dress made of condom packages. And she was like the queen of Tumblr from 2007 to 2010.
Okay. All right. I'm getting all of my like Gawker ladies.
Drew, is this just something you know or are you reading?
No, I'm on her Wikipedia right now.
Okay.
I vaguely remember this woman, but she is currently enrolled. Oh my God. I am also an MPP grad. She is a current MPP at Harvard University.
Crazy. Am I thinking of Socialite Rank? Was she on that?
She also had a column at Socialite Rank, yes.
Okay. All right. I'm getting all of my society ladies confused already. We barely started talking about this episode.
No, like, this kind of culture doesn't exist as much anymore. Like, back in the mid-2010s, I guess you had the Snap Pack people with, like, the Gaia Matisse's and the, like, Kira Kennedy's and stuff. But I don't really know who... I guess there's sort of a Dime Squares it girl factor there, but like not to the same extent. Oh, and like definitely not to the same like glam level that.
Oh, well, definitely not that. No. But I feel like
I also just feel like that gatekeeping element is gone because anyone with like a lot of followers on Instagram or TikTok can just kind of like roll up wherever they want or act like they can.
Yeah. That's definitely true. Like if the VIP list girlies can go to like Carbone, that's kind of like democratized Carbone as a space for everyone.
I feel like when I was rewatching, they like name dropped Beatrice in, and I was like, wow, that was like the very final frontier of like gate kept nightlife where you like could not get in if you didn't know the doorman or like the DJ, and there was no Instagram. And I feel like I used to remember reading online, like you know, Josh Hartnett would have after parties and he would make everyone take their cell phones and like put them in a bag. And that was even before iPhones. So, but it was like the grainy, like Gossip Girl-esque camera phones. And he didn't want to get like sold out on like Gawker 1.0, you know? I get it.
It was a different time. Everything was more special. Now they have to like manufacture that experience with the fucking Frog Club or whatever.
Oh, and also one of the other places that they name drop a lot that I noticed was Butter. And have either of you guys been to Jeans, which is in the old Butter space, but they're trying to make it just like Butter. It's like very funny and meta. It's like a restaurant club.
They're
really pushing it hard.
When I first came to New York, I wanted to go to Butter so bad because of Gossip Girl. I was like, well,
and One Oak, RIP. I don't know if One Oak is open anymore. Is
I think okay. LA one okay. is, or at least when we moved, it was still
there. I haven't been to the club in a long time. Any club.
And I would have
unless
been
I was there for work.
Here, so.
Yeah. I don't think we're missing out.
No.
No.
One question we ask every guest is, which Gossip Girl are you?
Hmm. I don't know. That's a hard question for me. I feel like I'm not bitchy or conniving enough to be Blair, but I don't know. I am like very type A. I'm also not. I'm not Serena either.
You feel like spiritually, like I feel.
Yeah, like I feel Blair. Like when I'm watching, I'm more like Blair's my girl.
Yeah,
but I cannot ever reach the level of like. Yeah, conniving. But she's witty and she's funny and I don't know. I just enjoy her very much. And I'm brunette.
Exactly.
And I have dimples. So and I like bows. So there's that. But yeah, I don't feel like I'm Serena. There's like a little bit of me that's like Jenny Humphrey, you know, I like pop punk and plaid skirts and like being a little bit defiant, but I don't know, she's kind of annoying. So I wouldn't want to say I'm Jenny.
I feel like this question, like saying you're a Serena is like saying you're a Jessa. Like no one really does it. And when you do it, when someone does it, you know it's real. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
How do you feel, Drew? You're making a face.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm on record as describing myself as a Serena in some ways, but also the idea of being a Jessa is so
foreign,
antithetical to like how I live my life. But I do feel very cuspy with Blair too. It's, I think my Serena-ish tendencies are mostly the like sense that I feel like everything is happening to me and at me at all times and like just being completely like not in control of anything I'm doing at any given time. But like I would say like the neuroses I feel are very Waldorf-esque.
Waldorfian,
yes, the academic term.
And I'd love to know if you have like a famous Gossip Girl outfit that you turn to or like think about. No pressure.
You know, like I said, I was more of an OC girl and I would go out and buy outfits just because they were vaguely similar to what Marissa Cooper, Summer Roberts wore. Like I said, lived in Virginia Beach as a teenager. And the closest Hollister was in Richmond. So my mom, when I got my license, would let me and my friends like drive the 2 hours to Richmond and go to Hollister and come back. Cause like I wanted to dress like them so badly. I feel like Gossip Girl was more like, it was just like a little too aspirational. Like I really enjoy, you know, Blair's headbands and, you know, Serena's like leather jackets or whatever. I feel like there was a lot of Hervé Léger going on. It was also funny in this episode particularly to see Jenny like sneak away. I forget if it was Bergdorf's or Bendel's with Lily Vanderwoodson, and then she saw her mom there and Lily was like so bitchy, like, what are you doing here?
hard to say.
I know. But I really do appreciate how the Gossip Girl editors always made sure to like close up on like the Louboutin shoe or whatever and just made it very evident like, oh yeah, these people are really fucking rich. Like, I don't know any, I mean, I've worked in fashion for a very long time. I know very few people who like go in and pay retail for anything. None of us make enough money to. So like these people are very, very wealthy and like the camera work makes that abundantly clear.
Absolutely. All the details. Quiet luxury.
Now. Extremely loud luxury.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that one. Drew, do you want to do a recap of last week and then we can jump in?
Sure. So last week, Gossip Girl told a tale of two Thanksgivings, and we were Thanksgiving. On Thanksgiving 2006, Serena pregamed the Macy's parade and went on a blackout vandalism rampage full of destroyed pies and shower nozzle warfare. Blair and Nate's relationship was still going strong, and Blair's gay dad had not yet torn the family apart with his homosexual indiscretions. On Thanksgiving 2007, Blair's divided family was divided even further when Eleanor's pre-divorce anxiety drove Blair to a bulimic relapse. Serena arrived to save the day, but delivered Blair into a lion's den of litigated or relitigated 1990s love triangles and possible incest, as Lily and Rufus's summer of love finally came to light. All was well that ended well, as Allison used Nerf football under the Brooklyn Bridge to placate Rufus's newly raging Lily love, but was it enough to keep her family together under one roof? How's that for an open concept? XOXO, girls' room.
Drew, you need, I don't know how you feel about doing it every week, but I feel like you need to do it every week. You're always so good at it.
I try to channel the spirits of Kristen Bell and Cicely Von Ziegesar. I've never said that name out loud before, I'm like Ouija boarding with both of them, but two living women.
Really?
So
it's really
channel the spirit for that. So
funny. Oh my God. So good. I mean, I don't know. Maybe we should just start with Blair because, I don't know, this is a tough one.
Yeah, let's start with Blair because I feel like she's still, for all the, like, grandma mess that is this episode, like...
We need to do a whole separate grading system for season. Oh my God, she was cracking me up in this episode.
Yeah. Will you both refresh my memory? How many episodes out are we from Blair and Chuck, like, getting it on? Was that two prior to this or one?
That was two prior to this, but it's been ongoing for the past three episodes now.
Got it. Okay.
So it's fresh. It's relatively fresh.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
But she's going to the depth. Oh, wait, should we grade first?
Yeah, let's grade first.
Okay. Drew, go ahead. I need to think.
I gave her a B. I thought she took a lot of hits this episode, but ultimately she gets to hook up with two hot guys, go to a ball. And like she has a prince as like a third option. Like that's a pretty good third option to have. So for those reasons, I gave her a B. What about you, Julia?
I honestly, now that I'm thinking about it, I think she deserves an A. Like, she was totally dating like a man, as they say. She was texting Chuck while at the tuxedo fitting for Nate. I don't know. I really liked her attitude in this episode. And yeah, she hooked up with two hot guys, and that's cool.
I think I'd probably give her a B plus. I know I was talking about her and Chuck before, and I thought it was very sweet how when, like, Chuck was texting her at the beginning and she was, like, giddy like a schoolgirl, but then she was also very funny at the Deb ball when Serena was reading her, like, fake intro paragraph. She goes, "Oh, stop, you sound like me." Like, she's very self-aware in some of these moments, and then she also told one of the, like, interns or assistants, like, "If you don't get your shit together, I'm going to go Naomi Campbell on your ass." Like, she had some good moments, but then I felt a little sad at the end when she was like reading Chuck, you know, I don't know. It made me feel kind of sad. And then she went home to Nate, which like was hot, but at this juncture, like I was very pro Chuck and Blair.
Totally.
So, you know, I kind of wished
it wouldn't have hit to be.
I know. I wish it wouldn't have hit a snag so soon, I guess. But also, like, seeing your ex, like, punch somebody in your honor, that might get me going, too.
Yeah.
That's never happened to me, so I can't speak from experience. Maybe if it does one day, I can report back. But, like, I feel like that would make me change my tune, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally understood her motives in this episode. I love that she had these three options. What'd she say? She wanted a Romeo, not a Hamlet, when she was talking about the prince instead of Nate.
I just like any backstory on this prince. Oh, and then there was like Carter Bazin. That was for Serena though, not Blair. Sorry.
Right. But then they confuse it with which we'll get into. But I I'm telling you, this storyline had my brain in a pretzel. I was like, wait, okay, why is Carter now?
Yeah.
Blair, I don't. Also, why is Carter Bazin just kind of like back without explanation? Is that explained later in the season? I don't remember.
I don't remember. I think it's something to, like, they kind of allude that his parents are like reeling him in after his like drug fueled world tour and like the Russian mob entanglement we saw them get into at the beginning of the season.
But... Oh, wait. I do think he comes back and doesn't he steal from Chuck?
That was the Russian mob entanglement.
Got it. Okay.
That was a few.
Yeah, he stole like Babe Ruth's baseball or something. Oh, something crazy.
His like wash
Russian entanglement. I really should have like read Cliff's notes. Like this is a lot of information to retain.
You should continue your Gossip Girl journey after this podcast because it goes down easy. It's just a nice nighttime show.
I probably will. I won't lie. HBO Max, I'm paying for it. Might as well, right? Yeah.
Might as well. I think we said this earlier, but New York Times chose Blair for A Night Out With. Interesting choice, like a socialite high schooler. But
high schooler, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like that's also another good... Wait, but that's never revisited, is it?
No.
Toward the end of the episode, we just see like the article with a photo of her and Nate like looking happy. But that's like it.
Right. Okay. All right. Glad they tied a bow.
Yes. Like Blair got her article.
Oh, yeah. Love it. See, she did win this episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't she like give, like, you made a fool out of me in front of the New York Times or like something like that? Like, oh, Chuck. You're in the doghouse, man.
I mean, they start the episode hooking up. She's wearing her amazing. Mm. I remember that scene vividly.
I know.
The song that's playing, it came on my screen and I was like, yep.
Mm-hmm.
I know it all too well. And Nate comes out of nowhere at the bottom of her steps. We have this ongoing joke, Alyssa, that people just break into Blair's apartment. Like, people will just drop on by. So, Nate broke and entered. But
they never go up the stairs. They just wait like they're supposed to.
Exactly. That's true. Oh, God. But this is when he asks Blair to go to the ball with him. As Chuck.
Chuck overhears.
Yeah.
His like tin can to the door, might as well have that, you know. Just
truly
poor Lauren Chuck. I feel like they're all so good at making like sad puppy faces on this show.
Yeah, they
no all... one has a poker face at all.
This is a very classic daytime soap opera kind of style of acting. It's like the like close up on the face when they're giving the reaction shot, and like. Googling, you can see that half of the people on this cast have backgrounds on like actual like Days of Our Lives kind of soap operas, and I'm like, it really shows because they can do the silly material and do all that too.
A fun fact about me is I've never once watched a daytime soap.
Never,
not ever.
You were never.
Oh, you know what I used to watch though? The Soup on E with Joel McHale, and he would sometimes have clips on there. But yeah, it just like never really. Got my attention. And this is probably like a weird thing to bring up, but I feel like Gossip Girl was filmed in a time pre like everyone getting insane amounts of Botox, so all of their faces move so they can emote really well.
That is true.
Yes.
Like I've just started noticing in the last few years like sometimes a little bit of nuance is missing in acting because like people's faces can't move. Yeah. Like even Lily Vanderwoodson, Lily Bass, whatever her name is at this point, like you can tell she has like a little bit of light Botox, but like even her face moves. And I'm like, okay, this is great. I love this.
Some fun eyebrow raises and eyebrows.
Yeah.
but
it really is crucial.
It is
crucial. And nowadays, like the threshold for preventative Botox is 25 as opposed to 35, like it was in 2007. So like all these Riverdale kids are like,
yeah, I bet it's even earlier than 25.
But what was I gonna say? Oh yeah, no, they're all good facial actors except for Nate, except for that man has two modes. That man is, I don't know at what point. I think he improves as the show goes on, but maybe
it's just like very vacant. Like, I'm not really sure what's going on in that brain. Like, he's hot, of course, but like, right. I have no idea what that guy is thinking ever.
We already talked about Blair being consumed by Chuck's texts as Nate's like trying to plan this romantic evening for them back, and he's like drawn into this new Blair. What were you gonna say, girl?
I mean he's trying to draw her in by dressing up like a damn circus ringmaster. Like
that is
the outfit he wears to this ball with the ginormous tails,
like a damn
was beyond crazy.
It was this also this weird gray, this weird beige gray, if I'm filter.
It sounded like a zoot suit, but like a very muted zoot suit.
It also looked too big on him. I don't know. I wasn't impressed.
It was so distracting in that scene, though. Like, I really couldn't pay attention to anything else that was going on beyond just like, I was like Blair being like, what? Like, what are you saying? Like,
yeah. That's another emotion she plays well, is hopelessly devoted and distracted. She later tells Chuck to like fuck off after he breaks into her apartment. I don't remember why that happens.
I don't really either. I think it's because she's just like, he's jealous about Nate and he's not going to the ball with her. So like they have to talk about that for like 2 seconds before we move on to the meat of the episode. Like that was a very filler scene for me. Like the real confrontation I love between the two of them was at the end where she dramatically is like, you ruined my dress. You ruined my night in front of the New York Times. It's over. She doesn't like his scheming, which is crazy. Because like
irony. Yeah. And then cut to, she's making out with Nate.
Oh my god, yeah. And I love the Nate winking at Chuck in the distance.
That gave me the heebie-jeebies. Yes. I don't know about that.
The show is...
Like, Nate, you don't know what happened 2 episodes ago.
The show also loves, like, someone catching. Like, and... I don't know. It reminds me of when Serena walked in on Blair and Chuck. And like, I'm sorry, how do you not notice? How does Blair not notice that?
None of these rich people lock their doors. And then like the door that leads into the room that they're in with the other door. Like, I'm sure there's lots of little places they could lock themselves into. I guess in the heat of passion, you forget, but.
Yeah. Maybe.
I don't know. It seems like if there's like Gossip Girl on the loose, you would want to double check.
I mean, okay. Why are these people so brazen with their whereabouts and their, I mean, I don't know. It's worse than the paparazzi, this Gossip Girl.
If I have one note about this first season, is that the threat of Gossip Girl is not really all that high, it seems. She's sort of an annoying nuisance. She's sort of a blog that people check at points, like a few episodes ago when Nate and Mystery Blonde Jenny are spotted hugging outside of a hotel. Like, it's just something people see, but it doesn't really seem like a threat. And I would argue the show gets too, like, wrapped up in it being a threat later down the line, but right now it's not really, like, it's not too much of a presence.
They had a dedicated Carter Bazin map, as they said in this episode, which I thought was funny. It was like, remember Gawker Stalker? Very, very like that.
They use Gossip Girl like as a convenient tool, you know, like it was a very convenient way for Chuck to begin his complicated scheme where he makes it seem like Blair is actually with Carter, but blah, blah, blah. Right. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Gossip Girl's kind of an afterthought in these episodes.
I do like the idea of the person who ends up being Gossip Girl doing a Carter Basin watch, though. That's so funny.
Baywatch.
Baywatch. About it.
Baywatch. Should we move on to Serena?
Yeah.
Would it make more sense to do maybe Nate?
Okay, well, let's do Nate, I guess, actually, because I guess that's part of the plot line.
Yeah.
And Chuck, too. I mean, we kind of said a lot about Chuck already, but...
Yeah, I mean, Chuck, let's give him... Let's grade Chuck and then get into Nate.
Yeah. Chuck got a D for me for just scheming and losing. It's hard to scheme a lot and then not have it work out. It's a lot of effort.
Yeah.
I would give Chuck a similar score. I was going to say a C because in the beginning he did seem happy. And he did seem like a little bit apprehensive, like that the whole thing was going on, you know, behind Nate's back. But like also, how bad could Chuck possibly feel about anything? And he did seem like real devastated at the end.
Yeah.
As devastated as Chuck could be about anything. And I also think it's a real bitch move to just run away from your problems, which everyone in this show does at every juncture. But I feel like wasn't the last scene of Chuck in this episode, like going to the airport, like,
yeah,
like probably going on vacation with some babes. Monaco or wherever the hell he was going. I don't know.
I don't remember what his plan is there.
Mm-mm. Maybe like one of his dad's other hotels or something.
That's simple to get away. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that's an easy. That's an easy, quick one. Chuck fails. Nate, on the other hand. I feel like he might get a C from me as well. I really thought the punching was a bit much. Yeah. I don't know. He's just a fucking loser. Like
you're a pacifist anti-violence.
I mean, I just don't know how I feel about that. I don't know how. I mean, I'm not going to stand up for the cotillion ball, but they're making a mockery of this whole thing. Come on.
It's funny not to talk about the OC again, but there was also a fight at the cotillion. In the OC too, but it was between the parents because one of the parents had a dad like Nate who like stole a bunch of money and like drained all the trust funds, and so this one at least Nate was doing the punching. I feel like it's maybe more appropriate for the kids to be doing it than the adults.
It's funny how there's so much overlap between the OC.
Rich people problems.
I mean, apparently getting punched at a cotillion ball is a prevalent problem.
I do feel like the brief moment of happiness Nate feels at the end of this episode is probably fleeting. Like, I know I haven't caught up the rest of the season. I forget what is coming, but I can't imagine he's going to be on this high for very long.
No, like his family life is still crumbling.
Totally.
And he's still Nate at the end of the day. Like Nate's never going to be happy in this Upper East Side environment. But I gave him a B minus because he did have probably his most positive episode since we've started covering this show.
Yeah. And
it did really feel like he was very male Serena in how things kind of happened to him and at him. And
life was washing over him.
Yeah. Beyond the punch, like he didn't do a lot of things with agency this episode.
Except for the punch. Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to have to go with C. I wasn't impressed by him. I think he could use a little work. And I don't know. I wanted Chuck to get the girl, unfortunately.
I know, I did too.
You know?
Yeah. It's a bummer.
But it is a bummer. I mean, I really think he's my least favorite. Nate and Rufus are my least favorite characters on this show.
Oh my god. Julia, you would have been so mad last week. Sophia Jr. guest last week was very pro-Rufus in a way that I was glad you were not here to witness. So
I cannot stand that art gallery owning peasant motherfucker. Oh,
he thinks he knows struggle.
He knows leather bracelets, and that's about it.
Loves a leather bracelet.
Yeah. Should we get into Serena?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, this plot line was crazy.
Yeah, I feel like I need a diagram. So this is the first time we met Cece, right?
Oh, yes.
Yes. And okay.
I don't remember if she makes another appearance.
So I did look because I was trying to figure out how old the actress who plays Cece is. Answer 61. Crazy. They just put her in like an insane like blue wig to make her look ancient. Didn't work. But she is in 10 episodes of the show. And I read the plot synopsis for her kind of arc on a Gossip Girl. And I will say this is the simplest her character gets. It gets insane from here.
Why don't I remember? I mean, I guess I'm in for a fun little ride.
She's like a villain in the second half of the show.
Okay. I think she's a villain in the first half.
She's been villainous.
This is we find out that she like offered to pay both of them off to break up with each other. Was that this episode? Yeah. I think so. Yeah. Okay. See? All right. I'm already getting confused. Oh my gosh. I feel like this whole episode is just about like insane family dynamics and generational trauma and
really.
Yeah, it's bad.
It's bad.
She's like trying to use Serena as an avatar because she can control her own daughter. We all see how that kind of plays out with Rufus and Lily. And then Serena I guess we'll get right into it. But like, I was proud that Serena stood up for herself in that way. I don't remember exactly how they rewrote her like intro paragraph at Cotillion, or was it Carter who did that? But I mean, it was cheesy, but it was funny. And also, like, I'm glad that she, like, you know, took it upon herself to, like, at least make fun of the whole situation and, like, take as many billionaires to bed as she can. Like, haha, like, I'm going to embarrass my family. Like, I little teenage angst.
That was another moment where I was, like, I felt weirdly, like, Republican in that moment where I was, like, they're making a mockery of this whole event. I was clutching my pearls.
Okay, question. Can either of you, like, explain to me, like, what Cotillion is for? Like, did the parents, like, pay money to have their kid in it? Like, I don't really understand.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. It's essentially it's like an auction for virginal teenagers. I really think that's the best way I can put that.
Okay.
You debut your daughter at 16 or 17 in front of high society as a future bride, more or less.
Got it. Wow. So do you pay like dues to a club? And if you are part of this club, then your daughter gets to do. Okay. I should have Googled this.
It's less of a club and more of like a
society.
It's like charm school. It's charm school, actually. Yeah. So the dancing that they're doing at the beginning, which we totally glossed over, was I thought it was in fucking insane that the minions were dressed up in like flash dance style leggings. like ballroom dancing.
There's only one girl I noticed, and she had like just a normal outfit on with like a tie. Like, Avril Lavigne style, like over her t-shirt. Like, okay. Ashley Simpson, is that you?
But that is like the dance lessons and the like table setting kind of lessons. Like, that's what you pay for. That's what the money goes to. Well, some of the money, and then the rest of the money goes to like throwing the party. But
got it.
Every major city has a cotillion or a debutante ball, kind of.
Okay.
And I guess what you're really paying for is for your daughter to meet a rich man, right?
Yeah.
Or gross. Yeah, prince.
or
in Blair's case, yeah. But it was. I mean, Cece came in hot.
Oh my! So she's a chairwoman, right? That's the or a board member.
It's like 15 years ago, something. Yeah.
So she's a cotillion legend, and when she hears that, when Grandma Cece hears that her granddaughter doesn't want to go, she tells Lily that she might have "quote unquote" something in her lungs. And her dream is to see Serena in the cotillion. And
classic maternal manipulation.
Yeah, I don't.
Familial gaslighting.
I wish I wrote down exactly how Grandma Cece says it, because it was comical.
It was so, equally comical.
Yeah, and also like they were sitting down at Lily's house, and I just couldn't help but notice how Lily was like eating her cracker or her cookie and like barely taking bites of it. I'm just like, I don't know if this was an acting choice or if you're just being ridiculous right now.
maybe a little of both.
Yeah,
tiny little bites of a tiny tiny little cracker. Just like, oh my god. I know. Lily definitely eats like a bird. For sure. Looks like a bird, eats like a bird. Dainty little bird. But yeah, Cece came to the dance recital or rehearsal, asked if there was a bar.
She is just running this town, and Serena's totally like enamored by her, thinks she's the coolest woman ever.
Yeah.
And, you know, doesn't want to see the manipulative bitch, but
no. Yeah. But she's been the puppet master the whole time. Like, not only is she faking cancer to get Serena to go to the cotillion, she also doesn't want Serena to go with a poor kid. And like a week in advance has called Carter Bazin to serve as her kind of backup date.
Oh, yeah. And then we kind of get wind of, you know, the other layers and layers of the story when Cece goes up to Lily, she goes, "Dan Humphrey, is it?" Uh-huh. And we're like, oh shit, like
this
goes deep.
She is, I mean, she is that she needs
a. I know. She's like, not only gonna do it once, she's gonna do it again.
She has Lily edit Serena's mission statement or whatever. Mission statement is definitely not what it's called, but the whatever they say when they announce her.
Yeah.
Cece has Lily edit it. It originally said she like wanted to teach in Asia, which seems like a good kind of Miss America-ish thing for her to say. But
take a gap year or something.
Yeah. But instead they edit it to say she wants two kids. I don't remember what else. But, and then, as we mentioned, Jenny helps them play a prank and edit it again.
Mm-hmm.
That she wants to bet a bunch of millionaires. And then I clutch my pearls. I thought Serena looked great in that gown, though. Classic Serena look. Yeah, gold color.
Gold is her color.
Yeah. I mean, Blake Lively at this point was just like, she was an Anna Wintour favorite. Like, you can put her in anything and she looks so beautiful. So true. I agree. Like, this was a really good fashion episode, but like, particularly Serena's cotillion look or debutante look was really A plus. I liked Blair's too with the big bow. I feel like that's very of the moment right now. But yeah, it was great.
I also thought I didn't think about it until now, but they kind of complemented each other. Like the silver kind of stuff. Cute. What were you going to say, Drew?
No, I just thought it was a really dramatic choice too, because when she confronts her grandmother at the end and is like, I'm cutting you off. Don't ever speak to me again. Don't come back to this town ever again. You crazy bitch.
Are you even sick?
Oh my God. And then Cece goes, no. He says, but I might be, although cigarettes.
But I might be.
Oh my God.
And at the very, very end, they show her taking pills and like, who knows? I don't know. I was so confused.
Okay, wait, pause. They showed Cece taking pills. Maybe I was tapped out at that point.
Yeah, it was during the apologize montage. Right?
Yes. And they like show her like with her gin like all shaky, and then she like takes a pill and looks like forlorn. Oh. So we're like, oh, maybe she lied to, I don't know, whatever.
Maybe she lied about lying.
Yes.
Or maybe the drug problem.
Yeah.
That's an illness.
Yeah.
Pill popping granny. That's her vice.
But what other CC atrocities do we learn this episode? Because there were more.
Can we? Can we get into the CC section?
Okay.
Yeah,
yes,
we do.
Oh, sorry. I thought Cece and Serena were going to overlap, but
no.
Her villainy is so outlandish. We had to carve out her own
great. Okay. Yeah. Amazing. All right. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that Serena said this episode that made me laugh, but I feel like Serena kind of had a little bit of a broody episode. It was like a lot of she was taking a lot of information in.
As for real, I mean, she had a lot of brooding going on, but also I didn't know what it was about Serena that was so annoying to me until I saw it in this episode. Her giggle doesn't stop.
No.
She is just like a giggle going on. The marble mouth Serena is giggling constantly in this like almost forced baby way.
I'm baby.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why she's like, you know, the charming one and Blair's like, you know, the
true.
I don't know. But yeah, it is kind of annoying. You're right. I'm just now thinking about that.
I noticed.
She loves like, this is Dan. I love Dan.
There's a lot of giggling around Dan in particular.
Mm-hmm. Hair flipping.
Yeah.
If I had beautiful blonde long hair, I would flip it a lot too, though, so I can't blame her.
Oh, yeah, not at all.
She was working that ponytail at the end when Dan was like twirling her around when he came to rescue her from Cotillion.
That was a nice moment.
It was. I gotta give it to him. Go, Dan.
Lonely boy. Do we have anything else about Serena, or should we move on to Grandma Cece?
Let's move on to Grandma Cece, because everything else I had for Serena was in my line of the week section.
Okay, great. She did have some lines. But Cece gets an F for fucking evil. She was a total menace.
Yeah.
Strike one. I think this is strike one. She bribes Rufus. No, this is definitely strike one. It's one of the strikes. She bribes Rufus, saying she'll buy every single painting in his gallery if he convinces Dan to ditch the ball.
Yes.
And then we learn
that... I was going to say, and as an added little jab, it's his wife's art.
Mm-hmm. And we learn the significance, because he learns for the first time. See... It's too much going on.
Mm-hmm.
He learns that back when he was dating Lily, Grandma Cece gave her an ultimatum and said, mm-hmm. you either need to give up your inheritance
or you'll lose your inheritance if you stay with Rufus. If you break up with him, you'll have your inheritance.
Yes. And, evil.
Right. Totally evil. And this is Rufus's first time hearing the news and shocked.
I feel like there's probably a really insane mix of like devastation and relief. Like you kind of hear him in the phone call later he has with Lily, like, you know, had I known that you didn't leave me for him, like I wouldn't have let me go or something like that. Yeah, so I feel like it reignites hope in Rufus that we will probably see play out like in later episodes when he's like, maybe I haven't lost her for good. Like maybe she still loves me. But like, ugh, what a fucking bummer.
She doesn't quit.
Mm-mm.
That woman just, what else does she do? She asks Lily to rewrite the mission statement or whatever.
She calls Carter Bazin, before Serena even agreed to go.
I mean, here's my question. She's an older woman. How does she keep track of all this? Like, how does she keep track of all her lies? And
she's clearly not suffering from dementia. That's for
sure. She is the gin and the pills have not affected her one bit.
Nope. She is.
The pills are not like
the functioning.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just love a plot line of a grandma lying about having cancer.
it's so audacious and funny. I also, this is a trope I love in every soap opera. The speech from the rich person to the poor person that's like, you'll never be one of us.
Yeah. Oh my
God.
You'll never understand my world. Like, yeah. I feel like one of them got the speech, or maybe it was Dan. Did she give Dan? She gave Dan a speech too. That's another strike. Like, I forget why he walked into, again, I'm losing information about this, like too much happening in this episode, but like, I guess were they at Blair's house or Serena's house? And she was like, you'll always use like your dessert fork as a, you know, like you'll use the wrong fork. You'll never be one of us. You'll always be on the outside and like just trying to destroy his self-esteem. So he bows out and leaves Serena alone. Yeah.
But like, little does she know that Dan is a proto like Occupy Wall Street, like renegade and isn't going to take that lying down. So, but should we get into Dan?
Yeah.
Wait, I feel like I'm going to give CC a D for devil.
Yes.
Yes.
Devil. Absolutely. Okay.
I feel like we didn't even cover everything she's done, but that was like a good chunk of it. I feel like there's more, but we got worse.
If you think of any, we must revisit because I can't remember the others. Yeah, that woman is on some other level.
Yeah.
Okay, so Dan, I'm gonna give him a B. I see, Drew, you gave him a B too.
Yes. I thought he was a great boyfriend this week. He will always be a little annoying, and I thought the vest he was in for most of the episode was pretty unforgivable. But he was a class warrior. I think he's really bad at articulating himself. Like when he showed up to Serena's in no uncertain words was like, your grandmother's a lying bitch, but I'm not gonna really tell you why I know that.
Yeah.
That's fighting words. Like he needs to communicate better, but ultimately he did. He had a pretty good episode.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm going to go ahead and give Dan an A just for the twirl at the end. That really was a good moment for me. I thought that was very sweet. I like when he comes and sweeps Serena off her feet.
That was a really, I mean, I think that is what bumped him up from C to B for me. I was really not going to forgive him for the vest. Yeah. And
that's fair.
And he was just, I don't know, he turned it around later in the episode, but he was just annoying me with his bullshit. Said, what was he?
Evergreen.
Yeah, he was just making some annoying fucking jokes throughout the whole thing that I can't recall.
Yeah, it's I feel like he had a funny one-liner with Cece. If you know, she was like, "Oh, do you like it here?" He's like, "Yeah, it's like a museum. It's a little cold, but the water pressure is like fantastic." Or I don't know, whatever.
Yeah, no,
but he's he stood up to Cece once or twice, where I was like, "Go Brooklyn boy,
go down.
Lonely boy, whatever."
Yeah, so he calls the ball classist, and when Serena introduces him to Grandma Cece, she insists that he tells her how he really feels about the cotillion, which is kind of a crazy position to put your boyfriend in, but he does, and there you have it. He says it's classist, and little Jay really wants to go, and
there's also a funny Rufus one-liner with Cece, where she was like coming up to him and he goes, "I would say it's good to see you, but I know how you hate dishonesty." Like, I just like how both of them kind of just like didn't care.
Like father, like son.
Yeah.
Humphrey men are not afraid to get catty. It is a good quality of theirs.
Yeah.
They're from Brooklyn. Yeah. Spread hate. It's the Brooklyn way. When Cece, we just said this. Cece talks down to him and says he doesn't belong here. You'll use the wrong forks, yada, yada. And that's when Dan tells Serena, "I don't think your grandmother is who you think she is." And then that's another miscommunication that happens, right? Like you said, refuses to tell her why. And then leaves Serena in tears. Right? Oh, yeah. Wait, no. That was at the ball when he said, I don't remember. At one point he says this and it's not communicated why.
Yes, that is at her house.
Correct.
And she's like, "I think you should go.
I think you should go.
I think you should go."
Yeah. You did a really good job, Julia.
Fuck. That's my Serena. And yeah, she doesn't believe him until he actually explains his goddamn self when he comes to the ball later and he says, "Your grandma's lying about blah, blah, blah. My dad just told me XYZ. And then she believes him. And, we gotta talk about Lily giving Dan the speech outside the ball, like,
yeah,
she's a damn teleprompter. Mm-hmm. Like listing off the reasons that he's a good influence on.
I will say I find Lily to be one of the most frustrating characters on this show. I'm just like, this woman cannot make up her mind for the life of her. It's like, poor little rich girl. Like, she obviously has chosen like the easy way all the way through her life, you know, like she could have made like one challenging decision and maybe been happy, but she just like ends up in bad marriage after bad situation after this after that. And then like all of this stuff with Rufus, like talk about poor communication. It's just like, if you had an adult conversation one time, maybe none of this would like be so fucking dramatic. But she kind of has that like blank, like sad-ish look and just kind of keeps her mouth shut.
Yeah. I mean,
bothers me.
You see where Serena gets it.
Yeah, you're a grown-ass woman. Act like it once.
For once.
Mm-hmm. And then she dares to give these children advice. Once in a while she'll come out with like some good advice, but you know it's like her just saying what she wishes she would have like done. But
yeah,
that's kind of how it felt when she was reading off the teleprompter today.
Yes.
Yeah,
she maybe was feeling some regret about the Rufus situation.
Mm-hmm. They're definitely taking their sweet time setting up the like Rufus Lily inevitable reunion that happens.
Yeah.
Like it just drags on and on. But they are doing a really good job of making them sort of endgame by positioning Allison as a huge pill, which
yes,
see a lot of Allison.
She is, yeah,
a huge pill this episode.
I just like also can't relate to that sort of like wanting to be tortured emotionally, romantically. Like,
no.
I feel like there's this whole thing where like Lily is always showing up in Brooklyn. It's like, you don't have to go to Brooklyn. You can never see Rufus again. Like, mm-hmm. I understand your children are dating or whatever. And I know that the kids get into a lot of like, I don't know, trouble is the word, but a lot of like scenarios in which like both parents need to be there. And so she'll like run to Brooklyn and all of a sudden she'll be in the loft. But just like, maybe keep your distance, bro. Like, this is torture. I hate it. I hate it for both of you.
Really, but me. Yeah.
So again, remind me, did Allison come back last episode or two episodes ago?
She came back two episodes ago.
And by this time, we're already like, get the fuck out.
We were kind of get the fuck out two episodes ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Face doesn't move, but not because of Botox.
No.
There's not a lick of feeling behind those eyes.
No. And also, so, you left your family.
You left your family. Own up to it, girl. Like, yeah. Stop acting like, oh God, I do not like what goes on between her and Jenny.
No. Jenny, I feel like, was doing what every teenage girl would do in this situation. And obviously the added layer of like her mother leaving her and then coming back makes it even more contemptuous. But like, it was just, yeah, I did not like that at all either.
Yeah.
Talk about like parental gaslighting, manipulation. It was just like not good. Really?
That's why Jenny gets a D from me for deadbeat mom, because she just is saddled with this adult child who is like grounding her for no reason. Like,
for no good reason.
It's Allison's fault that Jenny has found a maternal figure in her father's ex-lover who can buy her shoes. Like, that's a lack of a real maternal influence that is driving her here. And for Allison not to understand that is just, I think, willful ignorance. It's deep and delusional.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know, but I don't think Jenny should catch a stray for that. I feel like Jenny gets a C because she's seeing what's out there, maybe. And she's, I don't know, she helped them at the ball. She helped Blair fix her dress. She helped Serena figure out how to fuck over her family with a speech. And I don't know, I thought that's C-worthy, even though she had a few flops.
Yeah, I would say I didn't give Jenny like a ton of thought this episode.
Yeah.
So I would just give her like C, middle of the road. I do think it was, you know, I thought it was nice that she like wanted to show up and help and like see what was going on. Like, she was just like being genuine about like her enthusiasm about the whole thing. And like, she got dealt a shitty hand, as these characters often do.
Yeah.
And like, it was, you know, I forget exactly what happened when she got the speech from her mom. Like, you know, she really wanted to go to the ball, but then it was her mom's gallery opening. But like, her mom's been back in her life for like 4 minutes. And it's just like, I don't know, like, what do you do? Like, I remember when I was a teenager and I would fight with my mom about that stuff. Like, the mom always wins 100% of the time. Like, I felt like I was never seen, never heard, whatever. And I'm sure Jenny was feeling a lot of that and like running away to the ball when she heard that Dan got to go. Like, I probably would have actually, you know, I think I would have been too scared too. And I think it's interesting that Jenny, like, I feel like in a lot of turns, Jenny is not afraid of her parents. Like, she gets into trouble like later this season and like later seasons too. But I think I just had a much more insane fear to do anything. I would have never run off to Cotillion.
No. Entering her rebel era, though.
I like, know. I never had one of those as a teenager.
But
one, like, really, like, overtly bratty thing she does this episode, though, I think actually would merit some discipline. Like, her saying that she doesn't want to wear other people's shoes when her mom gets her those really nice thrifted, those looked like they were in good condition.
You not bought me more shoes. Like, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I do feel like maybe back in 2007 or whenever this was supposed to be taking place, it wasn't as, like, you know, cool to go shopping vintage, and like, I guess we're supposed to like believe that Allison went to like a thrift store and dug through the bins and found these like shoes, but I'm sure she didn't go to like, you know, a Salvation Army type place. I'm sure she went to like even like a Beacon's Closet where they have like nice shit, and I just feel like that is a very early to mid 2000s like attitude to have. Like, that didn't age well for me. Like, I'm like, actually, everyone your age is probably wearing like cool vintage archival like fashion, whatever. Like, that's just like really bratty. You're right. Bratty is the best way to put it.
Like, when I remember watching it as a tween or whatever, and thinking when those shoes came out of that box, I thought, ooh, like, yikes.
Mm-hmm.
when I saw her reveal the shoes at my current age, I thought, oh, those are kind of cute. Like,
yeah,
thrifted, like, just was a dirty word back then.
She's also, when her mom is at Saks or Bendel's or whatever, she's buying the exact same pair of shoes, just new. So it's not the style that's off-putting. It's literally just the fact that they're pre-worn, which is so crazy. It's not like her mom's getting you like 80s prom shoes.
I wonder if I'll fully admit here, I did not watch the Gossip Girl reboot. I like could not get through even one episode, but I wonder if those characters like shit on Depop and stuff, because that would have been like the equivalent of Jenny being like, I'm not wearing someone else's shoes.
They definitely were too woke to shit on Depop. They were like, they were like, I only wear sustainable, like, you know, like,
got it. Okay.
I mean, from what I watched, I only watched a few episodes. It was truly horrendous. Just like, could not get through it.
Totally off. I mean, like, we said it in the first or second episode of this, like, Gossip Girl series that we've been doing. Like, you kind of have to have bullying to make this show good. When you can't bully people, then there's no show.
No. Mm-mm.
No. I also thought it was random that, getting back to Jenny, why won't they let her volunteer for the cotillion ball? Like, why?
Oh, it's because she was scheduled to volunteer at her mom's gallery opening the same night.
That seems like something you can work out, right? I don't know. I feel like
that was the whole thing. Like, yes. I feel like Allison was being very unreasonable, because like Jenny had their outfit on and she like, I kept the tags, I can return it all. And it was just like a very,
like, why
they were just like face. It was like a face off for power.
Yeah. I thought that was very strange. Like, don't you want your kid to do something they want to do instead of making them come to your art show? I feel like that would be worse. Like, I don't want you to be here.
Yeah, especially if your relationship is strained, like, maybe throw the girl a bone. Like, hey, if you can, you know, come here until like 8:30 and then go, like,
they were
Allison clearly hasn't had a ton of parenting under her belt, so she fumbled a little bit.
Yeah, she's new to the game. God,
I think
damn.
We gotta move on to final segments.
Yeah, I think we should. There are a lot of good things to get into in the final segments. Go.
Well, Needle Drop of the Week, the best song from the soundtrack. I'm sorry, it has to be the Pierces with Got a Secret.
Oh, that was not my choice.
I mean, that I just thought it was so funny. Like, why are these spooky? Why is this spooky duo singing at cotillion?
How long after this did Pretty Little Liars use
that? Was
it?
Another
Yeah, so I think Pretty Little Liars came out like 2 or 3 years after this, but I was looking at, I knew nothing about the Pierces, who are the sister duo that sing this song. I thought this was like a cover of like an old like 1860s folk song or something. No, it is an original song.
Brand new.
These are these two like sisters from Arkansas who do like creepy doll music, and all of their songs sound like this. And this is the first instance of Gossip Girl featuring a, like, basically getting paid to feature an artist on that
episode.
They would
do that more later.
Most famously with Lady Gaga. Wow. But for now, we're getting these kind of, like, broken doll, like, like the Suicide Girls singing on stage. It's kind of crazy. But that song, for people, I mean, I'm sure everyone who listens to this podcast knows this, but that is also the Pretty Little Liars theme song, and it's really crazy that both canonical shows have this one song.
Well, I chose Apologize by One Republic and Timbaland because, like I said, I was in college during this era when, like, Timbaland was on a tear and was, like, producing everything with Justin Timberlake, Nelly Furtado, all of it. That song was inescapable for me for a while, so it has a special place in my heart. And also, I just feel like it was a good choice, you know.
Yeah.
The Blair and Nate moment, their first time together, Dan sweeping Serena off her feet. Like, it's a lot happening.
Yeah.
Memorable.
Totally memorable. Gave me goosebumps. Is giving me goosebumps talking about now. I'm so corny. But I totally agree. I think Apologize is the only choice. It's an iconic final scene.
Yeah. The montage, I mean, this show is so good at ending montages, but this is definitely one of the best ones. Like, Blair, yeah, like, back to Chuck in the, like, that bullet gray gown, the wink, yeah, from Nate, Bill popping grannies. Like, it's just so good. It's so good. Awesome. Oh my God.
I know, and like Lily looks so happy when she's like seeing Dan and Serena off. Like, oh, that could have been me. But like, she kind of wants it for them, which I thought was sweet because Cece is trying to like continue the family like trauma, and Lily's like, I can be the change. I don't think that's gonna last.
No, that's bad. I love that they can say everything with just a glance. This cast,
no, they can't.
Can we do outfit of the week?
Yes.
I had a few call outs. One, I really loved Blair's red tights under her shorts.
Mm-hmm.
She was the first to ever do it. These girls' wishes. Like, you know what I mean? I feel,
yeah,
like Blair's such a style icon that, yeah,
the whole Chanel Spring 24 collection this year was these kind of like, I mean, she's sort of wearing the, like, American Apparel disco pant under the shorts, but, like, the Chanel collection is this, like, tights under shorts and, like, sheer skirts and stuff for the entire collection. And I, like, was so glad we were covering the episode this week because I was like, oh, my God, like, the tie-ins between Blair's style and, like, what's currently walking down the runway are just, it's, like, too loud to ignore.
I love that.
For me, I wrote down Blair's cotillion dress, which I was Googling around to see who designed it. And then it came up that it was Eric Damon's first dress that he was able to design for the show. So he was inspired by Marie Antoinette, I guess, hence the big bow. But yeah, I really just liked her whole look for this evening. It's really good.
I love that. I think I saw the same like quote or information. I saw like he said something about how it was supposed to be designed by Eleanor Waldorf.
Mm.
So he said something about how Eleanor is based on Carolina Herrera.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I thought that's so interesting. But yeah, mm-hmm, very inspired. Oh, yeah, that's a good one. Drew, tell us.
Mine is a little less fashion forward, let's say, but during this the tea scene at Blair's apartment, the minions were dressed in matching bowler hats for some reason, like Liza Minnelli and Cabaret. I thought that was a bananas choice. I love that they dress up the minions.
it's
so funny. But that's really my pick this week. This was a really iconic fashion episode all around.
It really was. We need to do a quick shout out to Little Jay dressed as like a detective. Do you recall the outfit I'm talking about? She had this like pom-pom newsy cap on and like this tweed vest. I don't know what that was about. I love her style evolution. Like, she's starting to become, you know, like mean to her mom, and she's trying new things with her outfits. It's funny.
Mm-hmm.
I thought she was doing something with this.
Teen angst.
Yeah.
Then comes the pretty reckless in real life.
Yeah.
So life imitates art, imitates life. I don't know, but I was here for her. I love Taylor Momsen.
Yeah.
I'm a fan.
I was thrilled to see that her and Connor Paolo, who plays Eric, were hanging out last week. I was,
ooh,
you know, love that. I think Taylor Momsen has been so like averse to the Gossip Girl at all for 15 years now, but I think she's coming back into the fold a little bit in a way that I'm a little interested in.
Yeah, she was like very serious about her music.
Yeah, and I mean, she has a very lucrative music career too.
Yeah, I saw her live like a couple years ago. She's like very talented.
Oh, wow. I did not know that. I totally stopped keeping up. I think we say this maybe every other episode, Alyssa, fun fact. Drew and I went to middle and high school with Taylor Momsen.
Oh.
Yeah.
How was that? Was she just like a normal, did she like go to school normally, or did she have to go to work?
So she was gone a lot. And I think after kind of like halfway through our freshman year, she transferred to like whatever the New York Kids Professional School is in New York. Which would have coincided weirdly with when she like left Gossip Girl, not when she was actually on it.
Oh.
But I think it's because she moved to like music and tour and stuff. And
got it.
It's basically like an accredited homeschool program. But yeah, really random. Her younger sister is really good friends with mine.
Love that.
That part. Okay, line reads. I have a few written down, but my number one is CC to Dorota. I don't like my ice to get lonely, dear. Like waving her cup.
So funny. She's that gin
CC.
I have two. One is from the very beginning of the episode when Nate is all confused about Blair, and Chuck goes, like the book says, she's just not that into you. And then the other one is when Blair is at Cotillion and she says to the like little lackey, like, if you don't pull it together, I'm going to go Naomi Campbell on you. I really like that. I feel like that was a throwaway line, but like real heads know.
Yeah.
Yes. It was so beautifully thrown away. Yeah. Like she, I love it.
You don't want Blair to go Naomi Campbell on you. You don't want Blair to go Blair on you, but.
You, absolutely.
Those are my two.
So I had two as well. One of them is just a funny line delivery from Blake Lively, as always. Dan, that's my grandmother. And then an actual sincere line that I think about a lot. It's so corny, but I think it's so iconic. It's my pin. I sewed it there so you'd always have my heart on your sleeve.
Yes, the very like.
I feel like I should have done a better job of saying these in character, but.
I can't do impressions at all.
Just like, trying our best out here.
Just approximate the cadence, but it's so fun to try to do Blake Lively too, because you have to close your
mouth. It's impossible.
So small to do it.
It's impossible.
Yeah, that's you got to make your mouth real like immovable. But no, Drew, I love that line. It's very like it sounds like a voiceover, but it's not. You know, the way she played.
Yeah, I like was just gonna try to do a line
in Blair, I mean Blake voice, and I'm like too embarrassed. I don't think I can do it.
I believe in you. I feel like you can do it.
Yep.
When she was asking, like, are you even ill? Like, I just, I like don't, good. Like, no. Like,
that was good.
That was really good.
But like when she's like getting emotional talking to her grandmother, it's like, ugh. I don't know.
Whatever. No, that was really good.
Gotta get some marbles for the next episode. Just like put it in my mouth.
That is
some Zin. Just like fill my mouth.
That's why her voice is all fucked up.
She has a mouthful of chaw at all times.
Yeah, she was an early investor in Zin, and that is so funny. Are you even ill?
My bully of the week. Everyone was a victim this week of Cece, who is kind of the ultimate bully of the week.
Oh, she's the bully. Obviously.
Evil.
Evil.
Yeah, evil.
Last segment, XOXO cultural thing we want to recommend this week that is not Gossip Girl related.
I feel like I know what you're going to do, because yes. I was going to do it too.
Oh. You go.
Are we talking about NYC prep?
Yes, we are talking about NYC prep.
So I was talking, I have a group chat with a bunch of my former fashionista.com colleagues, and we were talking about the Rachel Zoe project being streaming, which is another iconic fashion moment in time around this same time. I think it might have been like a teeny tiny bit later. But that again is more like the LA of it all. And I feel like NYC Prep, which also just started streaming this week, is like the perfect companion piece to watching Gossip Girl.
It very much is. When we were talking about the veracity of like Blair's night out with in the New York Times earlier, I was like, oh yeah, no, like teenagers just do homework and like stay for the SAT and stuff. But like when you watch NYC Prep and realize that, yes, they do that, but also they find time to go to like 18 and up clubs and drink long ice.
Oh my gosh. And they like sneak into Fashion Week or have like quote unquote internships. Like I remember I haven't watched any of it again. Like I watched it back when it was, of course, like in real time. And then I think I did a rewatch at some point because like, I used to have super cable, like I had every channel and everything on demand. And I feel like I found NYC Prep at one point. But yeah, like I think one of the girlies on the show was like interning for a fashion designer, and she could like only get a couple of her friends into the show. And it was very much like the Eleanor Waldorf situation where like Blair could seat her, you know, minions second row. And then I don't know, it was just like too on the nose. I feel like it's like exactly what happened with the OC and Laguna Beach.
Yep. 100%. Like, and also Desperate Housewives and Real Housewives. Like, you kind of have to.
That is a show I never watched that is like at the very top of my list. I've never watched Desperate Housewives. I know I'm missing out.
It's
I know I am.
Really good.
Yes.
It gets silly, but like everything. Like all the Nicolette Sheridan seasons are like must watch TV, I think.
Gold. We talked about once for half a second making that our next show, Desperate Housewives.
Ooh, if you do it, I'll watch it and come back on.
Yay.
But I was going to say the other cultural thing that has nothing to do with Gossip Girl that I feel like I should suggest. I don't know if you guys watch a lot of Bravo, but I've been watching The Valley, which is the Vanderpump spinoff.
It's, yes, we love
it. It is.
Yeah.
It is kind of bringing me back to the original glory of Vanderpump. Like,
I agree.
These 100. People are so messy still. Like, Kristen and Jax were made for this. They were made in a lab to be messy, chaotic, non-self-aware reality TV personalities, and getting them back on the same show is just like what society needed, I think.
Mm-hmm. I tweeted
going so off the rails at such rapid speed that I am like so hooked.
It's so good.
It's just incredible to watch 4 episodes in, Kristen Doty alienate herself from an entirely new group of people. It's incredible.
Did you watch the one that was on last night and streaming today where she called? Okay.
Don't tell me. Yeah.
No spoilers.
Okay. There's one scene where the editors come for her so bad, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about when you see it. But I was just like, I have Peacock, so I watch it the morning. I watched it this morning when I was drinking my coffee, and I like almost spat my coffee out.
Gosh.
Honestly, picking up where Vanderpump is leaving.
I know. So anyone out there who has not watched it, because it doesn't seem like your cup of tea, because it's like married people with babies, like it is deliciously messy and fucked up. So. Yeah. I also really like Summer House this season. They're really bringing it with that.
Yeah, I'm halfway through my catch up. I think I have 2 or 3 more episodes this season, but the Lindsay Carl of it all is very...
Oh, yeah.
It's dramatic. I really like the 2 new guys that they added, too.
Yes, West. I would date West, if you're listening to this, yes. If you're single, if you're not dating Ciara, which I hope you are.
I hope so, too.
If you're not, call me.
He is just very... he's just a very sexy guy. That's kind of all I can say about that.
Very charming.
But before Julia gives her rec, just quick programming update. In mid-May, we will be doing a special episode of the podcast, specifically on the entire season, the one and only season of NYC Prep. So I'll save my thoughts on the show for that. But everyone binge it. It's only 9 episodes. Peacock's vault release that they just did with that Tabitha Salon takeover Rachel Zoe project, Real Housewives of DC, which is really bad, but you kind of have to watch for Mikel Salami.
Never watched that one.
It's bad, but it's a historic document because of the one housewife who snuck into the White House state dinner and got escorted out by the police because she committed crime. I don't think the show's like pretty good otherwise, but Julia, what's your XOXO?
I have been watching Baby Reindeer on Netflix, and the hype is real. It's good. It's a good, like, suspenseful Netflix series. And I'm not one to recommend a Netflix series. I think that is a garbage streaming service. But this is really, I don't know, it's doing something for me.
What's it about? I don't think I've actually heard of this one.
I haven't either.
It's about this comedian who bartends, but an aspiring comedian. And he has this woman who's stalking him and coming into his work every day and stalking him. And it's about their relationship because he kind of likes it, but then she's insane. And
sounds kind of stressful.
It is stressful, but I kind of like that, like, right? Psychological thriller.
I'm into it. I'm into that.
It's good. It's British.
Well, Alyssa, thank you so much for being here today. This was a real treat.
Yeah, thanks for having me on this like crazy episode.
I mean, to be fair, they're all crazy, but this was especially
CC crazy. Really threw like a wrench in everyone's lives. So, you know, go off, queen, I guess.
A bit.
If you would like to be found on social media, where can people find you?
Oh, people can find me on X, using scare quotes for X, and Instagram at Alyssa Vingan. Yeah, so hit me up. And thank you guys for having me again. This was fun.
Thank you so much for being here. And like we end every episode, XOXO.
Girls' Room.